This is Jeff Blankford. My guest today, Phil Giraldi, is a former CIA counterterrorism specialist and military intelligence officer who served 19 years overseas in Turkey, Italy, Germany, and Spain, and speaks the language of all those countries. He is executive director of the Council for the National Interest, a Washington-based advocacy group that encourages and promotes U.S. Middle East policy independent of Israeli influence. Phil was also a founding member of the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. His articles, such as the ones we'll be discussing today, can be found on the UNS Review, and I've had the pleasure of having him as my guest on Takes on the World more times than I can count. So welcome once again, Phil Giraldi, to Takes on the World.
Thank you very much, Jeff, for having me on.
Well, in your August 14th article on the UNS Review titled Confronting Israel, the Jewish State is Not Our Friend, you begin with responding to a question you are often asked, as I am myself. Why you have this thing about Israel, with friends suggesting that you would be much more respected as a pundit if you were to instead concentrate on national security and political corruption. So I like your response. Let's kick off the conversation with that.
Yeah, I basically said, well, you know, the fact is I am interested primarily in political corruption and national security and foreign policy. But the problem is when you look at those issues, you keep coming back to Israel as the causative factor. Why is our political system so corrupted? It's corrupted because Israel is the principal corruptor in terms of foreign policy and national security issues. So you come full circle and realize that to answer those questions, you have to talk about Israel. And of course, in the mainstream media, nobody wants to talk about Israel.
Well, you point out that Israel, not Russia in the article, is the one foreign country that can interfere with impunity, yet it's immune from criticism. What brings that about?
Well, that's basically the evidence in what we have referred to as Russiagate, the investigation of collusion between the Trump people and the Russian government, basically has revealed that the only government that apparently was interfering with the Trump campaign was Israel. Israel asked the Trump campaign to intercede with the Obama administration when Obama administration was going to abstain in a UN vote on the Israeli settlements. So that was a direct interference with the new administration coming in. And, you know, so in a sense, if you're looking for who's interfering with the U.S. government and who's manipulating our system, there's scant evidence that it was the Russians, and there's much more evidence that it was Israel.
When you talk about one thing that distinguishes Israel is not only does it lobby, but it actually and helps to shape policy. But in another article in which you wrote on September 4th on Israel's fifth column, you talk about how it works from within the government, how government institutions have appointed pro-Israel Jews.
Yeah, well, basically what I was talking about was how American Jews who are self-identified as Zionists have been very effective in getting themselves into positions in the U.S. government where they can work from inside the system to benefit Israel. And you can go back, obviously, as far as the George W. Bush administration with what happened in the invasion of Iraq, which essentially saw a bunch of Zionists who were well-placed both in the White House and also in the Pentagon. I'm talking about Paul Wolfowitz. I'm talking about Doug Feith. I'm talking about Scooter Libby. These people were able to feed bad intelligence into the system on behalf of Israel, at least in part. And the result was that the United States launched a war which has been characterized as the worst foreign policy disaster in the history of the country. So that's one example. But in my article, I also talk about other organizations. There's the Office of Terrorism Finance Intelligence, which was set up up in 2004 by George Bush, it's always been headed by a Zionist American Jew. And the staffing of it is generally also American Zionist Jews. And they exist basically to protect Israel and to punish Iran in particular. They are constantly initiating sanctions and going after Iran because Israel perceives Iran as its enemy. So it's that kind of thing where certain places in the government, the choke points, the key points, Zionist Jews, American Zionist Jews, will make an effort to get into place in the system. You know, David Cohen, as DDCI, Deputy Director of Central Intelligence, came out of this system, this system at the Treasury Department, and there he is, number two at the Central Intelligence Agency. He has no background in intelligence. And the State Department, same thing. Used to be there were complaints about the Foreign Service being Arabist, inclined towards Arab point of view. Well, it's no longer Arabist anywhere. It's been taken over by, again, American Zionist Jews who essentially have figured out that's where they want to be and that's why they want to be there, and that's what they do.
What's interesting is that this is all published in the newspapers, and the names of these folks and their background. It's interesting, Stuart Levy, you mentioned, would speak in front of AIPAC. He didn't try to hide his affiliation and support for Israel. Even after he resigned and Obama became president, Levy went over, as I recalled, and told Netanyahu not to worry because the office would still be in good hands. In other words, this office is the one that determines what countries and companies are going to be sanctioned or boycotted by the United States government. It is an incredibly powerful position. I can't think of any position more powerful economically in terms of enforcing and implementing sanctions on any other country. Can you? Is there one?
No, I can't. No, I can't. And of course, the interesting part is, as you point out, with their connection with AIPAC, they're quite open about it. I mean, the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, which is neocon central, basically would collaborate with this office to come up with policies, and the Zionist Organization of America, all quite open connections between these people in terms of protecting Israel and being quite open about protecting Israel, and yet, does a squeak ever come out of Congress about it? Never.
Nor from the media, which, if they were on their job, they would be reporting it. It's like the AIPAC conventions that take place every spring in Washington, with each year there's 2,000 more people, saying 18,000 people attended the last one, and the leading members of both political parties and the government speak and pledge their loyalty to Israel, and there's a word about what they say in the mainstream media. You can find it on C-SPAN, but that this foreign country could have a lobby that has its the leading politicians of both parties pledging their loyalty to a foreign country is incredible, and most Americans are not aware of it. And so this requires the complicity of the media as well. It's that they've got their bases covered, no?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just it's been a case of the media basically abdicating its responsibility over the past 20 years to look at even government as a much more broader concept in terms of the corruption that goes on and the influence buying and everything like this. But there is no group better able to buy influence and to corrupt the government than the Israel lobby. And this we see basically on a weekly basis. But, of course, as you point out, none of it is reported. And if it is reported, it's reported with a very positive spin. I was just noticing some articles today on Israel come popping up in the mainstream media, and it was someone was referring to Israel as a liberal democracy. I mean, come on.
Speaking of the New York papers, today's New York Times has an article about what we were talking about. We have the headline, Education Department Reopens Rutgers Case Charging Discrimination Against Jewish Students. And you have Kenneth Marcus, Assistant Secretary of Education for Civil Rights And the New York Times says, as a longtime opponent of Palestinian rights causes, has injected federal authority into contentious fights over Israel that have invaded campuses across the country, he's going to make criticizing Israel a violation of civil rights because he's claiming that being Jewish is an ethnicity, which it is not. If anyone going to Israel will see, Jews come from a variety of ethnic groups, but if you were not in Rutgers, the case in Rutgers, students were complaining because of Palestinian activities for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, which they claimed were jeopardizing them, and the Obama administration dropped the case 7 years ago, and now the Obama administration, the Trump administration, with this Kenneth Marcus, with a long-time history of pro-Israel actions, is in this job not to help the civil rights of African-Americans, of Latinos, or Asian-Americans, but simply to promote Israel's interest. And people who opposed that initially said he was going to do the very thing he's done, and he's done it, and it's on the front page of the New York Times. It's not a secret. You think there'll be a major reaction? Any member of Congress will say a word?
No, I don't think anyone from Congress will say a word. And I think this is a perfect example of how it works. I mean, this guy deliberately maneuvered to get that position because that position would enable him to do exactly what he's doing. Under the cover of civil rights, he's going after anybody who's a critic of Israel. And the thing I find ironic about it is, they're playing games with Judaism as a religion and an ethnic origin, but we're talking about criticism of Israel. Israel's a nation. 21% is Arab, and they carry Israeli passports, and so the fact is, how do you define that criticism of Israel therefore becomes anti-Semitism because there are a lot of Jews living in Israel? I mean, the whole argument is ridiculous.
The next thing we know is they'll be attacked because of their national background, even though Israel claims Israel is the state of the Jews, but the many Jews who consider themselves Americans do not choose to have Israeli citizenship, and most have never been there.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. I mean, the point is here, Kenneth Marcus took this job basically so he could shut down at universities any kind of discussion on Israel, and that's exactly what he's trying to do, and he's playing games with how you label the Jewish people, how you label Israel, how you consider the relationship between the United States and these various groups, and of course he's basically doing it for one purpose, and that is antagonistic to anyone at the university level who is critical of the state of Israel in any way.
Well, this is something that's been going on for a long time, but under the Trump administration, it has exceeded in its reach and its power, which I mentioned early on. There's no administration, as much as every prior administration bent over backwards for Israel, none has done so as much as Trump. Talking to Phil Giraldi about a very tender subject that you won't hear on probably any other radio station in the United States, certainly public radio station, but one that affects all our lives. We had the Iraq War, for example, which was orchestrated, as you mentioned, by some very pro-Israel Jews who were neocons, and two of them, Wolfowitz and Richard Perle, bragged about their success and took credit for orchestrating the war until it started going bad. Then they didn't want to talk about it anymore. And we never found out about it because the Obama administration short-stopped any investigation by saying, we're going to look forward, not backward, which is effectively pardoning those responsible for the greatest disaster the world has had, and certainly in this millennium. And one can say it's responsible for the major refugee crisis that taken place in the Middle East and through Europe, which has created right-wing parties, xenophobic, anti-immigrant parties. That action for Israel because it wasn't for oil. The Americans didn't get Iraqi oil. No one wants to talk about, discuss that, and look at it. You write about this for UN's Review, but who else is writing about it in the mainstream media? You don't find anything about this subject being discussed.
No, you really don't. I mean, it's the hot wire of American politics. You touch it at your peril, and the experience of people who have touched it has essentially been that they get punished for it. And I attended a conference back about a month ago in Washington. It was on American foreign policy, and it was run by a group of libertarians who basically see American interventionism around the world and everything as poison. But in the course of a whole day of this conference, nobody mentioned Israel even once. Not even once. And I came away from it, and I was just astonished. I was thinking, come on, guys. Everyone sitting on these panels, everyone sitting in front of that room knows damn well that Israel is a major player in American interventionism in the Middle East. And let me cite the example of what's going on. This new guy, James Jeffrey, who is the U.S. representative, State Department representative for Syria, even though we don't have an embassy or anything there, but he's the Syria guy. So as soon as he's appointed, where does he go first? He goes to Tel Aviv, or should I say Jerusalem, and he has a nice chat with Benjamin Netanyahu. And a couple of days later, he announces that basically the U.S. position previously enunciated, that the U.S. would wait till the destruction of ISIS in Syria and then would leave, is no longer operative, because now the United States wants Iran to leave Syria completely and basically wants a regime change to get rid of Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. Now, these are Israeli demands. These are Israeli interests. They have nothing to do with the United States. The United States is not threatened by any of this, and the United States should get its butt out of it. But we are basically getting involved with this because of Israel.
I mentioned before I called you that Jeffrey, in the previous 5 years, has been a distinguished fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, a think tank developed by AIPAC in 1985, not to lobby Washington, but to make policy in Washington, and it has succeeded mightily in doing that. And a number of appointments from the Washington Institute have been made by the government, even by the Obama administration. And you, every so often, you read Israeli officers who retire come over and become fellows at the same institute. I've raised the question: are we occupied territory or an Israeli colony? But we certainly have a thumb or a stranglehold on us, on our policies, by a foreign country that nobody will talk about, no political person will talk about, because it's to do so is to risk career suicide. And so what you're saying, what we've been talking about, is taboo, even in alternative media. And I don't know the ways we are going to get around that, because we're now on the threshold of possibly a war with Syria, because the Russians are just had military exercises there, and they're not about to back down. We're on the threshold of a war with Iran, according to Israel's agenda. Everything that the Trump administration has done has been according to Israel's agenda. If there's something that we haven't done, the United States being we, I don't know what it is, but a number of people have pointed that out. And Netanyahu famously said in 2001 to a group of Israelis that the U.S. was something that could be moved around very easily. They were not going to get in our way. And that anyone can see on YouTube, but you're not going to read that in the newspapers.
I think the other issue we have to talk about is, you know, how did this come about? And I have been lately kind of making the argument that we have to be very clear about the organizations that have funded this, the organizations that have corrupted the U.S. Congress, the U.S. government, and of course the Jewish organizations. There's always this talk about, hey, the Israel lobby, well, that includes all these Christian Zionists. And, yeah, it does. But if you look at it in terms of who has access to the politicians, who has the money, it ain't the Christian Zionists. These are Jewish organizations, American Jewish organizations, and we really should start talking about, yes, this is not just a Zionist thing. This is a Jewish thing, and this is a Jewish community perception or a Jewish tribal perception that drives all this stuff. And until we're prepared to confront that and even use the J word in discussions of it, we're never going to get anywhere. And it also behooves us to put pressure on these organizations saying, look, you are bad for Jews in general because basically you're pursuing policies that a lot of liberal Jews in the United States don't support, but you act like you're speaking for American Jews overall, as does Netanyahu, and you're including them in the same basket. And these people don't deserve to be put in the same basket.
Well, the fact is It's a minority, a significant minority, which the insiders consider to be warm Jews within the lexicon of the Zionist movement. A warm Jew is a Jew who identifies with Israel. The majority of Americans, Jews, are liberal. They don't support Israel's policies, and they're not involved with organizations. But they are going to be tarred with this kind of situation when you see someone like Sheldon Adelson give $35 million to Trump, and Trump becomes his man. When Sheldon Adelson, even the New York Times, talks about how Adelson wanted John Bolton to replace H.R. McMaster and Mike Pompeo to replace Rex Tillerson, and this is how what happened. And Bolton, of course, when he was in the UN delegate under George Bush, he was a recess appointment, was praised by the Israeli ambassador to the UN as being the sixth man in their office. And now Bolton's make speeches that we're going to sanction the International Criminal Court if it brings any charges against Israel or the United States. But he's speaking mainly of Israel because the Palestinian Authority has gone to the International Criminal Court. We have Nikki Haley trying to outdo Bolton. She's over in Israel all the time. I mean, nobody seems to be commenting about this in the mainstream media.
Yeah, that's precisely the problem. Again, it's a failure of the media, and one might note that the Jewish community and the supporters of Israel have tremendous influence over the media, and that there just might be a connection there. So it's the media not doing its job, but it's also I think it was Steve Stanzowski who wrote his book, The Transparent Cabal, was it? Basically, he was talking about all this happens right out in the open. If you're willing to go and look around and figure out what AIPAC is up to, I mean, it's all on their website. And the Zionist Organization of America, it's all on their website. The Anti-Defamation League, it's all there. And yet, no enterprising journalists think it's worth losing their job, losing their career, by going after a story like this. They just ain't going to do it.
It is a problem, and it's something that needs to be discussed because we are facing a situation in which we may have a war in either with Iran or in Syria that will not have anything to do with U.S. interests but Israeli interests.
Yeah, that's exactly the danger. I defy anyone to explain to me how Iran threatens the United States, or how Syrian government in Damascus, which is having its own problems on multi levels, how is this a threat? How is this an interest of the United States? And nobody can do that. So they basically have stitched together this kind of monster in which the Russians are playing a part, the Iranians are playing a part in terms of destabilizing the region, as they put it. They've stitched all this stuff together to make some kind of argument, compelling argument, that the United States has an interest. But it's phony. It's completely phony. And the United States should not have gone into Iraq in the first place, and probably should have gotten out of Afghanistan right away after it entered. And we have this, we have the longest wars in American history going on right now, and trillions of dollars. The last estimate I saw, $7 trillion in credit card funded wars, and that's gone on to our deficit. And there's not an interest in, anywhere here for the United States to be involved in this level. But it's all about Israel, and to a lesser extent about the Saudi Arabians. They want Iran brought down. They want Syria to be in chaos. And that's the policies that we're pursuing.
One of the things that is the press doesn't report, but the Israeli press does, is dealings between the United States and Israel regarding Iran. September 17th will be the first anniversary of the opening of a U.S. base in Israel, which, according to the Israeli press, would be under the control of the Israel Defense Forces. And this is the Times of Israel report, that this is an air defense base designed to defend Israel against an Iranian attack. And obviously, if Israel attacks Iran, or even if it attacks Lebanon and Hezbollah fires a rocket and hits the U.S. base, the U.S. will be at war with Iran and with Hezbollah. In December, last December, there was an article in the Israeli press and on Israeli television about how the U.S. and Israel Defense Department intelligence agencies had signed an unprecedented agreement to a secret agreement, but it was in the Israeli press, to work together targeting Iran. And not a word of this appeared in the American media, other than a little item copying the Times of Israel story in the Business Insider. Extraordinary censorship applied by the U.S. media, because it certainly reads the English language Israeli press.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, the military base. I doubt if there's one person out of 100,000 in the United States that knows about that. That the United States now has a base in Israel that's under the control of the Israeli Air Force, and it's headed by an American Air Force colonel, I believe, who has said that his troops are prepared to die to defend Israel. The American public doesn't know about any of these things, and this base is nothing more than a tripwire. It's only partially manned. It exists there to bring America into any war that Israel chooses to start. And that's the reality of it. And yet nobody knows about it. And there it is, and nobody talks about it. And it's basically a guarantee that if Israel does anything, does a false flag, let's admit it, they're quite capable of doing that, or starts a war without any pretext whatsoever, they're quite capable of doing that too. And as you say, if Hezbollah responds, if Iran responds, if virtually anybody responds, the United States will be at war.
It's interesting that you probably recall Patrick Clausen of the Washington Institute of Near East Policy, who wasn't Jewish, but the Washington Institute of Near East Policy, nevertheless, is a pro-Israel policy think tank. He made a statement or a talk in 2012 during the question and answer period. He talked about the possibility or the likelihood or the need of a false flag to get us into a war with Iran. And he went through a history of false flags that have gotten the United States into conflict that we wanted to get into, but we needed an excuse to do that, going back to the Maine. And so the Gulf of Tonkin. And so he's saying something could happen in Iran, and everyone laughed about it. But this is quite possible to happen between, while we're looking at Syria, it could happen with Iran. We could be at war, because Iran is in both places, we could be at a war across the Middle East that would make the Iraq war seem like a, well, not like a picnic, but far more devastating, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the fact is that Israel has attacked Syria, has bombed Syria 200 times in the last 18 months. And how many times has Syria attacked Israel? Zero. And they are attacking both Iranian targets and Syrian government targets. And if they keep attacking Iranian targets, sooner or later, Iran is going to want to retaliate. And if they do, Israel will have started a war by virtue of the fact that it has considered Iran to be the enemy, even though Iran hasn't attacked it, and it considers it to be fair game to it to bomb and inside Syria, which is an astonishing kind of jump in terms of the reality we see here. I mean, Syria does not threaten Iran, Israel, but Israel sees Syria, Iran, Lebanon, they're all threats, and they all consider them to be like a free fire zone, like used to exist in Vietnam, where Israel could attack them at will.
Well, the two countries that don't seem to recognize anyone's sovereignty is Israel and the United States. And Israel doesn't seem to recognize ours. It's like here we are the main superpower. We're telling countries all over the world what they should or shouldn't be doing. And when it comes to the Middle East, sitting on our shoulders is the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. And this is something you find here no discussion of this in the mainstream media or NPR or read about it in the New York Times or any other publication. It's an extraordinary situation, and we could be at war at any day, and there'd be no previous discussion, and certainly there's no movement against it. And are you making any kind of predictions about what's going to happen?
Well, I have a deep fear that what we're seeing play out here is a combination of the Israelis driving the process there in the Middle East in terms of what is happening and how it's happening, and the fact that Donald Trump is clearly, by several ways of measuring it, in trouble politically, and is very dependent on a good result of the midterm elections. I think the White House might be thinking, in all seriousness, that a little war would not be a bad thing. You know, that rallies the country around you, and if you can kind of keep it little and under control, and maybe only kill a minimum number of people, it could definitely be a good thing in the election. That's my big fear about why I think the United States would kind of jump into this. This has worked before. I mean, historically speaking, if you start a war, the nation will rally behind you, rally behind the president, behind the leadership. And I have a bad feeling that that's kind of what's playing out, Israel and politics in Washington.
Well, Phil Giraldi, you write for UNS Review. Where can people read, get more information about your writings?
Well, UNS Review has most of my stuff. My feature articles are there. And the American Herald Tribune I write for on a biweekly basis. I also write in various other places. If you just kind of type in my name, the articles will come up.
And you're also one of the founding members I mentioned earlier of the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Sanity is really needed these days because the organization you work for has been so politicized, not that it hadn't been before, but Pompeo seems ready to carry out Israel's agenda and Saudi's agenda as well. He went over there. One of the first things he did was to go to Saudi Arabia and embrace Ben Salman there. We're in deep trouble, and I know a number of people were calling on the phone, a number of people, I suspect, objected to a number of things they heard because they don't hear this anywhere else. But we have another war. Maybe people will think about it, who was responsible. Phil, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today on Takes on the World. And let's keep our fingers crossed and hope we don't go into another war.
Absolutely, Jeff. Thank you for having me on.
Our pleasure. Take care. This is Jeff Blankford. Thanks for listening.